And I said, brother, help me please. But he winds up knocking me. To carry on. Oh, it's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO's End of Year Drive is happening right now. We invite you to become a member today by going to kboo.fm/give or by texting KBOO to the number 44321. Contribute now and help us meet our $70,000 goal by the end of the year. Join the KBOO family today at kboo.fm/give.
What makes you such a threat?
We choose the right to be who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power.
Muchacha.
Toya wa chianke chante wa ste na pechu za pielo le chante etaha o bugalake le unki piki he wa stelo. Greetings and good day and welcome, my relatives. I shake your hands with a good heart. It's good for all of us to be here. You are listening to First Voices Radio and Teokasin Ghost Horse, sending you greetings and strength from the highlands of the Esopus, or what Americans and Dutch call the Catskill Mountains. Regardless, it is the highlands of the Esopus in the lands of the Muncie-speaking Lenape. This is an all-Native hosted, all-Native-produced First Voices Radio, and Liz Hill is a producer of First Voices Radio. You can now hear us on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Buzzsprout, Spotify, as well as First Voices IndigenousRadio.org for archive, downloading, and listening. In a country where land is seen as a commodity and a means to generate wealth, what does it mean when the land has been stolen? Democratizing wealth is not an easy topic, and in order to sort it out, we must rectify a past filled with enslavement, genocide, brutality, and thievery. NDN Collective defines Land Back as a movement that has existed for generations with a long legacy of organizing and sacrifice to get indigenous lands back into indigenous hands. And according to Nick Tilson, Oglala Lakota, and the End Collective has an overall strategy to shift power, decolonize wealth, and resource indigenous peoples who are on the front lines of fighting for justice and equity. Rooted Resources was a weekend festival that shone a light on localizing economic power to nurture solidarity, awareness, and action. It was recorded at the Rooted Resources Festival, hosted by Good Work Institute in May of 2022. The panelists, Kapi'olani A. Larinal, who is Hawaiian, Haida, Tsimshian, and Filipino nations, Antiochusan Ghost Horse of the Minikoju, Itazib Chola, Lakota Nation. In the second half hour, there will be some answers to questions that were inaudible, and we hope that you will get the general gist of the question in the answer. And now, the recorded interview with Micah as the host. The topic, Land Back, the many faceted complexities that many Americans may not understand. Thus, for clarity, we bring you Land Back.
Conversation filled with a lot of nuance around what land really is and what it really means for us as we begin to really even think about what it means to democratize. What does it really mean to be in communication with each other, with the land itself? What does it mean to actually, those really basic lessons that we learned when we were in kindergarten sitting around our circle, we're sharing. Well, sharing seemed really important then. Like, what does it mean now? And what does it mean on land that's been taken, land that's been stolen, land that has had people enslaved and worked upon it? Where are we now and how do we democratize wealth in this way today? And so I'm really happy to have, again, Kapi'olani here, Tiokas and Ghost Horse. We had an amazing conversation even, was that yesterday? Just yesterday in regard to all this. So I just want to just first open it up with these two words from both of you, just get your take on just the idea of land back and what that means. Why is that? And
okay, I probably will take a different tact as far as not contrasting, but maybe including another perspective, native in this case, Lakota. But I want to describe what land is in my language and try to apply it to the English language. And what basically we would say maka, which in noun form means land back, but there's much more meaning to it, so maybe I should explain that. Maka is basically who we used to be, who we are, and who we will be. And ake means again. So we want to restore the memory of this land that is a source rather than a resource. So it's not delineated down into property values or even the logistics of what ownership is. Because when you come back to the indigenous folks of at least Turtle Island, that we still call it, is that there's no sense or there's no word for ownership. But the language I'm using now is often looking for, well, why isn't there? Why can't I wrap my head around that there's no ownership? Stewardship is still not sufficient enough for those people who are in environmental movements. So for me, it's the memory, and do those indigenous peoples have and are they able to enact, even reenact, the memory of how to sustain the land, not sustainable development or progressing with democratizing or even tying it to property. And it's all based on one thing I learned in Auschwitz a few years ago with my uncle. And at the end of the day, after viewing graves in Auschwitz and Birkenau, we sat down and asked him, is there a word for domination in Lakota? Immediately it was no. No word, no concept. Because you cannot relate to anything other than humans if you use domination. Relationship is not just humans anthropocentrically. It's those memories of trees, the land, and all that moves above the surface, on the surface, and underneath. And so that goes into a deeper sense of being. When you say land back, it's much more than gives that piece of land so we can develop it, make a garden, and make it good for humans, when we're actually, that's the premise of making land poor, making animal poverty, making indigenous poverty, and eventually making capitalism or democracy poor when it comes to eating, drinking, because we're only viewing land back anthropocentrically.
Aloha mai kaka, kako, ko'u inoa kapiolani. I'm Native Hawaiian, Kanaka Maoli, Haida and Simpson. So on my Haida side, that's from Southeast Alaska, I'm Eagle Clan. The people of the tall grass is where my family comes from. when we think of land, you know, I'm wearing this t-shirt, it says O-E-V. E-V is bones of our ancestors. So we talk a lot about when we're getting our ancestors back, we're getting our E-V and we're taking them back home. And O-E-V is actually a native person, native son or daughter of a land, of that land. I am an O-E-V of Hawaii, meaning, so the root E-V literally means bones of the land. So we understand that when we're taking the E-V, our ancestors, their bones, that they belong to the land that they came. And so when I think about land and the concept of land back, I always tell people that the land is the people and the people are the land. How we care for the land is how we care for ourselves and each other. And the concept of land back for myself, I think is, there's some tension there for me because I don't know, I think, yeah, in the greater context, I think that the way that we think as a Native Hawaiian, as a Haida, as a Simpson, as a Filipino, it doesn't fit with my conceptualization of land, right? I cannot own my ancestors or my people, but they are me and I am them. And it's complex, but I think when Tsiokasin shares like this deep layer of meaning, the source of how we know and understand land is so different from how people understand land today, because it has boundaries, property lines, it's owned. And so I'm really excited to be able to share a little bit more about, yeah, how we have these types of discussions.
Tsiokasin, yesterday you mentioned point of being in relationship to the land in terms of what can I do for my mother. I'm just wondering if you can speak about that a little bit, that relationship.
You know, the default that I'm speaking here, all our thoughts have to go to English or default or go to is how do we come up with solution in, to the problem that the language caused in the first place. As I say, ownership causes it. It gets in the way of understanding relationship with the land. So when I'm speaking about the relationship, I often am looking at the land, feeling the land in my language first. I dream in my language, I wake up in my language, because it's the language of the land. It's not a foreign language like I'm speaking now. See, and these nouns that I'm speaking in don't exist in the old Lakota. It's all verbs. So how can you find conceptual perspective in our language? Doesn't exist because everything is alive to us. And we use dead as if they were still here sitting in that empty chair, which to me, that's what it's for. It's empty because our energy is still here of our people. So the land is the same way. It's kind of waiting for people who think in property and ownership and domination to wake up, because that gets in the way of really relationship and relating to the land and feeling the vibrations, feeling the nuances, all of that, that we it's calling for now, because we get as far as terminology as saying climate change. And my people are like, what? What is climate change? It's workable. You can manipulate that and take it to the UN. You can take it to the COP 21, 22, 23, 24, where I've been to. And it's all about complexity and making it look like it, as if it was the trendy intelligence, but it's really intellectualism. So we're tending and to find bypass words to describe relationship with the land. And to me, it's always about what's the next trend to come along? What happens after post-capitalism? what happens after that? Then everybody's going to share. But no, it's really going back to the root where no one wants to say it, is post-domination. Domination will still be here regardless of what system, because the system is domination.
Happy Millennium, you know, both of you touched on land back and that it's tension-filled even as a concept. And I know at least yesterday, and I think it might be helpful for people to understand a little bit more of this concept that even land back is still kind of playing the game of that we're in, right? It's still within the confines of the very system determining it. Is that right? I wonder if both of you could speak on that a little bit, but I'll give it pass to you first, Capiano.
Well, the concept, the hashtag land back was actually, I think, prior to that, land grab. And I believe it was started by the Indian Collective. The CEO of the Indian Collective is, I think, Mark Tilson, who also is owns part of the company Tonka Bar, that Tonka Bar. He's Lakota. I don't know where in South Dakota he might be from, but essentially that land back really took precedence and became part of kind of mainstream after George Floyd and during the Black Lives Matter movement. And it was a form of solidarity between Black, Indigenous, and other folks of culture. So it was a way to really, in many ways, it kind of pushed forward this movement for solidarity. But at the same time, when you think of it in that framework, right, of this positioning, there's a lot of action and movement being made in communities of color. And then therefore it's like, oh, we got to think of Native people and we got to give the land back. Let's just give it back. And so it's problematic in many ways. It's because for many, especially reservations, for many tribes, if you give the land back to people and they're dispossessed of any type of money, they don't have the ability or the capacity to be able to, for example, in Oklahoma, a portion of the land was given back to the tribes there. They didn't have the capacity to be able to have law enforcement enforce now American citizens on what's now owned by these tribes. And on top of that, tribes were not allowed to then tax American citizens on the land that Oklahoma gave back to them. So there are all these really, really complex issues that I think people really need to understand when it comes to, if we're going to ask people to give our land back to us, what structures have already been in place that has restricted us from even doing anything in the first place with it? And that's my perspective. That's my personal point of view. But so we have to kind of really step back and think about, really think through, what does that mean when we ask for land back?
Yeah, and it's good because it's a point of contention always to default to what does that mean. Of course, in this language, we're always going to the domination language, the dominative language, to explain it to them. Oh, please. We're beggars and we're wanting our land back now. So we'll speak a begging language. And then we perform and we're within the rules and regulations of that default domination, then we'll get our land back bit by bit, right? But it's not gonna happen because that's too late in place. You think about it, land grab, is that what happened when Columbus got here? Isn't that what continues to happen? So how can you stop that monster within all of us, really? I remember when it was American Indian, hyphen. Then I remember it was Native American, without the hyphen. Then it turned into Indigenous peoples. And at the time I started the radio program 30 some odd years ago, it was, people thought Indigenous was a plant. That's how, you know, ignorant it was. I mean, really, 30 years ago. And since that time, the American public has, their vocabulary was 30,000 words spoken. Now it's 3,000 words spoken by the average American. 3,000 words. It's lost that much. So how can I understand, how could they understand land back? 30 years ago, what happened was, okay, now in 1995, when I was studying the Office of Finance and Budget and through the U.S. Census Department, they were delineating racial groups. And the last one came to American Indians, Native Americans, indigenous people. And we had to prove who we were. The only group had to prove who we were. Speak the language, be recognized by the community who speaks the language, and or prove that you have a degree of blood. So we were the only. If we didn't meet two of those, you couldn't be Native. It's paper genocide. Here we go into the modern times, and just a few years ago, they start putting us Black, Indigenous, people of color. And so now we have to work through this one. Let's put it in order. Indigenous peoples, Black, and people of color. I'm not too sure about that. Maybe people of culture, because a system that owns property does not want its people to think consciously that it's people of culture. And who has culture? Native people. And we're losing it because of terminology like that. So therefore, land back is contentious. It's warlike words. We're coming to get back what was already ours doesn't make sense. If it was stolen, what does that mean? Give it back. And you really, really want to give what happened to land, the pollution, all of that back to us? And then we're supposed to clean up the mess? See, there's a lack of responsibility, even in the word land back.
And speaking about language, it feels important to mention here, Susan, my colleague and I, at Gurwark Institute, we often talk about the word economy, because eco, an economy, comes from the Greek word oikos, which means home. And what does it mean when our language has been reduced, constantly is reduced, and so now we don't think about the management of home, which could be our houses, but also our land, where we are, right, our planet. If economy actually meant the management of home, and that's what we thought about, that concept might be different than when it's just been narrowed down to money. And now when we think about economy, we only think about money. And it's quite possible that a limited language actually limits our ability to conceive. And so I think it's really interesting as both of you talk about land and talk about the words that aren't matching up. The language that you speak, which is one of, as you were saying, is one of verbs, it's one of actions, it's one of being. That, like, and what happens when language then gets diminished, and this whole concept of what do we do with this, our mother, and when it gets reduced to, like, land back, and, like, what this language, the owning of language, has done to us.
Subjugation language, this objectification language, this noun language, this problem-solving, solution, look for a solution language, without ever thinking about the language as maybe it's the problem. So we're using the same language to wake up with that put us to sleep in the first place. And we don't want to go there. But we have therapy for that. We have trauma. We have, you know, we have therapies for that. Psychology will delineate your energy and you got to pay for it rather than the actual medicine. Because it's profitable not to think about the earth first. It's profitable to think of humans first. A very anthropocentric view.
It's interesting because I'm thinking of all the times in Hawaii when I would go out to different, like, sacred lands with my uncles, and that this concept, we always had this saying, aloha aina, aloha aina. So it's love of the land, right? It's that idea that it's not, it's mine. It's that I have a love for the land, aloha aina. Aloha, ha is breath, sharing in the breath of life. So when I say aloha to you all, it's sharing in this breath of life, in this moment. Aina is that intimate connection between our life and the life of the land. And so, it's just, like, for myself, it is difficult to kind of to have a conversation about what it would mean to have land back. It's I care so much more about individuals like you all, possibly, who care about the land. I care about the people who care about the land, because we know and we understand the value of it in a different way when we can be in relationship, when we can aloha aina, when we can be and breathe every, and that's the thing, is like we don't walk away and we don't say, okay, I'm gonna take off my Hawaiian hat, and we live in our values very clearly, and I think that's what makes it easy for, if we're going to go to New Zealand or any other country, we already know and understand each other in a way where we have a relationship with the land, and so there's a way of being in a culture that speaks similarly.
So this culture doesn't speak of land so similarly, right? We speak about land as domination, occupation, extraction, wealth, something to own, to occupy, something to hold on to hoard, or give back. And so just wondering what this culture of land, kind of what that means for you.
If I look at it, Mickey Mouse and McDonald's as culture, it makes me laugh, because it's fairly new. It's fun culture based on money, something that we've charged the earth. Basically, you think about it, earth gives us free water, free food, free everything, and yet look what we do to it. And we say that's freedom, because we can charge each other for something taken without ever asking, without ceremony, so to speak, without expression of the land, and we put it into the money aspect. When I was 14 is the first time I got what money was. You mean if I give you something, you're gonna give me something back? And you call that reciprocity? And I learned when I was growing up, you give something, you don't expect it back. But I learned differently here, because it had a different material value as far well as money wise up here. Well, how much am I worth? So this culture is based on how much one owns, the wealth, and how much meritocracy, how much degrees you have, whatever. The privilege, the access to more money, that's not culture to me. We have culture. You're talking about 100,000-year-old culture. Which one am I going to default to? The 3 or 4, maybe even 5,000-year-old civilization that came out of Greece? So everything here is baby. We always look at whoever came here as a younger brother and younger sister. We see that obviously still haven't learned how to live with the land. And that's all we're saying. Learn how to live with the land before the land takes itself away from you. I think it's you should be giving land back to her. Stop trying to save her. This is my view. Stop trying to save her, because she's doing that already. She's saving it. So what do we do as Native people from home? That's why we can't figure out what climate change is. And how could you give land back when Earth doesn't understand that?
Yeah, the idea of like, we have to, instead of demanding things, we have to take care of the problems that are happening. We have to take care, the planet is, we understand, yes, it's going through changes. Well, let's take care of it. Let's do it. It's time. It's time right now for us to focus on the things that are gonna affect all of us. It's the truth of things. This is going to all come down to affecting all of us.
And it is important to know that a lot of our languages do not have the word for exclusion. That's what relationship is about, to always include. Always. Because what does exclusion create? Division. So you can't leave anything, not just humans, out. Now you have a language of, from what my studies, multi-dimensional languages, like quantum physics languages that understand dimensions with one word. And I was explaining to David what mani means, and we all drink water here, right? Mani is voicing the living relationship between you and I and all things, and you call it water, and water is equitable. It doesn't discriminate, doesn't judge, doesn't dominate. we speak these languages through these elements and inclusivity. So what Kehlani is saying is that's what it is. We can't leave you out. And I often go to the metaphor of our language is so inclusive. Well, why am I on a little tract and island of a reservation in the middle of North America and they don't think about us? They left us out of the equation. If their language is so equitable, equality. And equality doesn't even exist in language because that's what we do. We're free because that's what we are. We don't look for freedom because that's what we are. And yet you have a civilization looking for it all the time. My default is going to be Capellani's language, which is an earth language. And it's hard to come from that conceptual mind to how do you do that? But then I don't have a manual in my back pocket to show you how to do that. It's a non-instructive. You can't teach it, you have to live it. That's why there's a living language. These are living languages. When I go to Hawaii, I see the language living it. Unlike the Black Hills in South Dakota, and vice versa, there is a way that moves, and oh man, this is so cool. Even though when it comes to Kingston, okay, what's underneath this? Is anybody thinking about what that is? That's land back. Give land back to the earth. I think we can do that. That's what I think. We can give it back by taking what we've done to it away and let that energy come through. These are not ideals. I mean, to me, they're not ideals. Because if that's where we come from, why are they such idealistic to a society that's searching for them?
Welcome on your return. Rooted Resources was a weekend festival that shone a light on localizing economic power to nurture solidarity, awareness, and action. It was recorded at the Rooted Resources Festival. hosted by Good Work Institute in May of 2022. Panelists were Kapi'olani A. Larino of Hawaiian, Haida, Tsimshian, and Filipino nations, Antiochus and Ghost Horse of the Miniquoju Itasip Chola Lakota Nation, being emceed by Micah. And now, the second half of First Voices Radio.
A funny thing that the dividing lines, the boundaries, property lines, borders, that in a planet of endless life, only one species gives a damn about them. Nothing else does. And here we go to war over them. I wanted to maybe just, especially with this concept of land back, I can imagine that people come and that there's struggle. For some people, there's like, wait, how do we give land back? For some people, there's, you know, I want to find out. I'm really curious because I feel like I need to make retribution in some way. And then you also land here and find that, like, actually, it's more nuanced than all of that. We're talking about land in a very different way. And so I just wanted to maybe make some time for to open up for questions. Because maybe it'd be make sense that people would have them, right? Like, how do we struggle with this? We're talking about even approaching land really through a whole different process. And I think one that, at least when I hear it, one that's really based in our values, not based in money. And so to me, it's really a question of how do we live in our values, which I think is really at the heart of democracy and democratizing wealth to begin with. That we have to actually live in our values, these deep values that I think we all actually have. They're not so foreign to us, which I think is also what you were saying, right? Systems of care is not so foreign to us. Sharing, this basic concept, is not foreign to us. And I think we all desire to actually be in right relationship with each other and with the land itself. And yet, everything seems to get in the way. Everything about our culture seems to tell us, right when we want to share, something seems to have us recoil a little bit, like, well, I gotta think about my, I might have to hold on to this because I gotta worry about tomorrow. I can't really worry about you right now. There's so many things that seem to interrupt that. And so I want to open up just some space for folks to ask questions, especially while we have Kapi'olani and Teokasin both with us right here.
Does there need to be an end goal, or can we just start with relationships and good faith relationships and these intentions of like coming together on
the land? Yeah, it sounds like you've really thought this through a lot and what it might mean for you and the land that you take care of. I'm not sure there's ever an end goal, right? There's never a goal, because if you are in relationship, and practicing that, my experience has been is that if you can practice that and be in relationship, learn from the land, right? We don't kind of say, I'm gonna do this to the land and then it's gonna be done, but that can, you know, what does the land teach you? How do you build relationship with the land? And what you will find is that we have to go in flow with what, you know, indigenous folks may not be here presently, but the land is here, and that there are other folks around this area who are also native. They might not identify as it, but once you start to cultivate and be able to share with people your commitment to indigenous people, then you start to naturally bring people in. We're already doing a lot of programs. Like, there are tribes in the New York State, there are areas in New York State where there are a lot of Native people doing things already with the land. There are a lot of elders who are gathering. And so one thing that I've seen emerge from the work that I've done is berry picking in Washington. They have seasons for that. So we invite elders to come out and their families and the children to come out and berry pick and do the things that they're already doing. And we always have to keep that in mind. Like, we already know what we're already doing things, and we already know how to use the land. It's just, we don't have a lot of trust. It's been a long time. And so cultivating relationship is important, and it's key. And like what Teokasin said is, like, we have to release our expectations of what might come about And you do it in the right, in the best way possible, with good intentions, and you consistently check in with folks who are connected to Native people to support you in that.
The focus, not necessarily. It seems, sounds like you're saying the focus more on my relationship with the land and learning from the land itself, and also relationships with indigenous folks that happen.
Yeah, and on a more like a very specific like kind of building partnerships with Native organizations that are already doing land work. There are organizations out there, and there are tribes out there that are already doing things with their children. I would love to hear your perspective. It gets complex. It gets so complex. We have a Lenape friend, Steve.
I'm going to take a little different viewpoint of that. Is more of a point of history, I guess you'd call it, spiritual history, if you want to call it that. We've put so much prayer, so much way of living with the earth here in all of Turlilan, buried so deep. Even our prophecies say that these new people will come, and it will take a while for them to get it, because they're eating our food, drinking the water, learning. But what's happening is they're claiming even that, naming like things like organic, you know, all these labels on things that are already existing. I mean, I could go to hear German chocolate. I'm like, what's that? What's Swiss chocolate? What is that? This is, where does it come from? In that prophecy, it says, when you begin, that this generation, these generations begin to eat our ancestors, our bones, the consciousness starts coming alive in these new peoples, which are Americans. And that consciousness of Earth is going to be needed at that time. And that's what you see is happening now. So, but then you go back to the value is which system is teaching its people to make decisions through the bank, and which value system, which value is still teaching, showing their people how to make decisions through the earth. There's a difference between that. We must see the differences. Now look for the little similarities here and there. We need to accept the differences. I go places where I'm never invited back because I'm speaking too much truth. I'm not saying the things that other Native people are hired for. And that to me says they've been affected by colonization. Still speaking to, redoubling down on the colonization by saying, oh, it's all right, it's okay, you know, but where we're coming from, there's no room for guilt, sin, blame, or any of that. It doesn't exist. So that clears it out. You're not giving land back to feel better, to feel benevolent. It's where it's a one-way thing. It came to you, and now you're learning its lesson, and now you can't do that anymore. That's just how it is. Stop doing what you're doing. And how does that go? How does that enact itself? Well, the earth is going to lead the charge by saying, well, look, you're not respecting me. I'm going to take away food. I'm going to take away water. I'm going to cause fires. People forgetting ceremony with the earth, and we turned everything into dogma, even property. You got to remember the history of this country, which I think it took 4 or 5 scripts to really get the Constitution out, life, liberty, and the pursuit of property, till finally he said pursuit of happiness, an illusion, but it hid property underneath it. Because you were told in a feudalistic system that if you own property, you could have a castle on that property and then control resources around it to make yours the castle. So that's where domination comes in. As Americans now, doesn't matter what color you are, it's the value system of that property, of that money. Doesn't matter what color you are. It's ingrained now. So I'm just saying, this is not your do's and don'ts. This is perspective that needs to be included. I can't tell you how to, but I can show you by experience what that is to us. Akantu is basically the earth being from the ancient future now. The earth being from the ancient future now. Now, the New Agers used to be here now. They used to use that a lot. Well, we've had this forever. Future doesn't make sense to you if you don't know what the past is all about. So the future of this country and progress thinking is not going to make any sense, because right now it doesn't make any sense. what sense does this make to the earth? Think about it. So in that way, it's maybe stopping and being right here at this moment without the guilt, the sin, the blame, or even the hope. And don't talk to me about hope, because I do not like that word, because you have to do something without hope. But there's a lot of, I mean, we have the experience of that. These words, like, what is, to me, what is colonization and decolonization? These words were made to say, like, people of color is another word for multiculturalism. They're just more words to disguise what the intent is. So sustainable development, like, what is that really? Putting civilization, this civilization, on top of something sustainable so that we can get privilege from it, access to it, better food, better whatever. But sustainability is what the peoples, especially in the Amazon, are protecting, trying to protect sustainability. The Aborigines are still trying to protect the land. In Standing Rock, it was about protecting. But we are being colonized away from protecting and learning how to be warriors. We're learning how to steward the land. In other words, that's a form of ownership. Really look at it. You have to look at the etymology of the words that we're using, because that's what it's about. Steve Nukan, our friend, we talk about it all the time. We talk a language we don't even know the root. Sustainable, that means maintaining. Sustainable, something that's already here. Earth does that already. We're adapting Earth to our needs rather than we adapting to Earth's needs. That's sustainability.
Yeah, I think that has to do too with, you know, when I think of places in the islands where I used to go to, these taro patches would actually use the natural water, fresh water streams located kind of like at the foothills of a mountain. They would use the natural waterways that were created already in order to build that taro patch. And so there's no need to I think what Jokisson's also trying to express is that there, in that setup, there's no need to kind of rework what we have established in something like a taro patch, because we are working with the land, and we have, and I think that's the challenge of sustainable development, is now we really have to fix what we've broken. And so it's, and then that becomes another, if we can only go back and adjust ourselves to the waterways, then we will not, then it will last forever. Thank you so much for your question. I always like to share with folks, if you can go back to your own ancestry, or if you can go back to beginning to understand your own history and where you come from and your family line, that gives you a lot of power. Power in the sense of empowerment and understanding where it is that you come from. Many of us have a homeland, but we've forgotten. And so remembering through your own lineage is the place to start, because naturally it'll take you back to a land and a culture and a people. There are some people who are adopted and are like, I don't know, what would happen if I was adopted? How do I work that? I think all of us still have the memory of land within us. So we have to start there. And if adoption, if we had new parents that were brought to us in our life, then we look to them. We look to the things that reflect the land. And you kind of just, I think, for myself, I just think it's, you kind of begin to, in my culture, we really lean into the other languages, like dreams or whatever our elders tell us or teach us. But the main thing is like to try to understand that piece of your own history.
I want to answer it this way, and may take us to maybe another understanding of it, possibly. My mother is 88 years old. She speaks the old Lakota language. In the old Lakota language, not the new language, by the way, it's based on nouns, because they're adjusting to this language. In the old language, You cannot speak Lakota without intuition. Think about that. You cannot speak the language without intuition. And that means, what is a tree? What is all of those beings without speaking the language that we speak? How do they do this? Their intuitive values, their intuition is their language. They're closer, they're living with the land. They learn how to live with the land. They're using the land properly with the tools that they've been given. So in this sense, maybe it's about learning that intuitive. I was with some, I guess, as an American, I could say, I was with some foreigners the other day from Netherlands and from Germany, and they both came up to me in their accents, and they said, we have no ancestors in Europe. Of course, we know our lineages, goes back to the so-called king. And that was linear. And they were looking at that, but we don't have ancestors. We lost the connection. We lost relationship with the land. So I think about this country, how many people have taken a DNA ancestry test? That's, to me, signifying. Even Native people are doing that. It's affecting all of us, but it's not going to get all of us. And that doesn't mean Native people, but other people too. It's not going to get all of us, because inherently that intuition is somewhere there. And that's what Mother Earth is calling for, looking for, weeding out, is that intuitive value.
I wonder if we've got one more, just maybe question or comment from anyone.
Well, I mean, what's approved in this system is NGOs. What's improved and approved in this system is nonprofits, but you still have to be approved by the government. So there's no way out of this system unless you are really truly traditional before America. Those pockets exist, and that's the pockets they're trying to get rid of. They want to democratize those pockets. Vote, participate in the system, because that's the reality, they say. And I know that there's another way. I know this. What can we do right now about the problem? Is there a solution to the problem? And I merely go back to recognizing, do not put indigenous peoples up on a pedestal, because that's separating them. Do not put them below, because that's separation. Engage with them actively, put them within your circle without domination. And that's what NGOs do, nonprofits do. They're still coming from the domination.
I want to begin to wrap up our time, especially feeling really grateful for the time that both of them have given, and wondering if there's any parting words or wisdom.
I may have words, but no wisdom. No, I just, for me, it's my uncle who's gone now, but he would, being in it with my radio show, said there's a way to live with the earth and a way not to live with the earth. We choose the way of the earth. So you can go with the AIC to another planet if you want, but your body stays here.
Just like OEV. When I talked about OEV, we are natives, we are of this land. EV is bones. The bones belong to the land that it comes from.
Thank you. Doksha ake watching telo, le unki piki hoe wash telo, wopila tanka. I want to thank you all for being here. It's good for us to be here, because the earth heard us first. Earth will hear us last. No matter what we think of ourselves as superior or inferior, she still loves us.
Rooted Resources was a weekend festival that shone a light on localizing economic power to nurture solidarity, awareness, and action. It was recorded at the Rooted Resources Festival, hosted by Good Work Institute in May of 2022. The panelists, Kapi'olani A. Larinal, who is Hawaiian, Haida, Tsimshian, and Filipino nations, Antiochus and Ghost Torts of the Minikoju, Itazib Chola Lakota Nation. And I'd like to thank you for joining us here on First Voices Radio. And this perspective, as a view from the shore, still watching the ships, oncoming ships, still landing. And from that point perspective, you go out there and you celebrate your holidays and you do what you need to do to find a way to express what you maybe haven't yet. But I do know, and in conversations I've had before with other humans, the being comes from nature. And if you feel like you're not being listened to, then maybe it's humans that are not listening to you, but the Earth is listening to you. And that's where I find a true listening, because look what she has allowed me to live within. And it is a point of reference always for me. Again, not the bank, but from the Earth. Again, Doksha Ake Wachinktelo. I'll see you again, and I do this because I want you to live. We'll see you next time.
Norman Solomon saying that you're listening to non-commercial, listener-sponsored, volunteer-driven community radio, KBOO, Portland, 90.7 FM.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM.